Daf Ein Gimel Amid Aleph. Now, before we start on the top of Ayin Gimel Amid Aleph, we're up to Meisvei, the second line. Let's just reiterate and summarize the Mishnah and the Machlokes regarding Makom Dira. How to define Makom Dira, Machlokes Shin Rav and Shmuel. So the Mishnah had established that if you have a house that's owned by, we'll call him the father of the house, the household, the father of the household, and you have many brothers who are quote unquote ochlim al shulchan avihem, which literally means that they eat from their father's food. However, they sleep, each brother sleeps in his own house. So in such a case, the fact that they sleep each one in their own house means they are separate reshuyos, and each reshuyos has to contribute to the Eruv. And therefore, if one of the brothers would forget to participate in the Eruv, that's going to generate an Isur, it's going to invalidate the Eruv, and the only possible solution to that would be for him to be mevatel his reshuyos. However, the Mishnah goes ahead and qualifies this. And it says the following, that this only applies, the requirement of each brother contributing to the Eruv, when there are other Dayarim, there are other people who share the same Chatzah. And there's got to be an Eruv now between this house, where the father lives, and the other houses where other neighbors live and share the same chotzer. And if the Eruv is going to be placed in one of the various homes of the neighbors, that's called, in the language of the Mishnah, molichim eruvam lemakom acher, and in such a case, every one of the brothers has to contribute personally to the Eruv, and again, fallback position, he's mevatel his reshus. However, if on the other hand, there are no dayarim, there are no other neighbors that share the same chatzer, so it's just the brothers themselves together with the father that share the same chatzer, or alternatively, in a case where there are other dayarim, but they place the Eruv in the possession of one of the brothers, in that case, ha'eruv ba'etzlam, in the language of the Mishnah, the Eruv was placed in the house of the father, and now we view all the brothers, insofar as they eat from the same table in their father's home, as one unified entity, one indivisible group, and they don't require that every one of the brothers bring his own Eruv. It's like a case where, let's say, in my house, I have a chutzah outside of my house. I don't need an Eruv to carry outside into the chutzah if there are no other neighbors that share that chutzah. And all the members of my household have the same status, and they can use the chutzah and carry any kalim that were shoves on Erev Shabbos in the bayis out to the chutzah. Because we're all part of one entity, one reshus. So we have a very complex situation here. It's not black or white. On the one hand, we're saying that if the brothers need an Eruv with other neighbors, and that Eruv is going to be placed in the house of any one of those Eruvs, then each brother has to contribute to the Eruv. And the reason for that is because each brother lives in his own house. But if we're talking about the, shall we say, the inner dynamics of the house itself, there are no other dayarim, or alternatively, where the other dayarim are going to simply place the Eruv in the hands of the father or any one of the brothers, here, we're going to view the inner dynamics here as such that all the brothers are part of one because they all eat from the father's supply of food, shall we call it. So that was the Mishnah. Now again, the Mishnah insists that if there's going to be an Eruv between the father's house and many other houses, or one other house for that matter, that share the same chatzer, then each one of the brothers has to contribute individually towards that Eruv. And the Gemara wants to derive from this Shmuel's conclusion in a machlokus between Shmuel and Rav. Shmuel and Rav debated the following question. When or where is Dira? What defines my place of residence? You know, if you're into American law, that's a very deep question, how to define residence. You know, you have a house in Florida, you have a house in New York, you have a house here, a house there. I suppose all over the world it's the same. You know, there are legal definitions of residence. Well, what is the halachic definition of residence? You know, I was thinking this could be relevant to Ner Shabbos. You know, I'm sleeping in one house, eating in another house. Where do I light my Ner Shabbos? Again, don't make any analogies. I don't mean this literally. I'm just giving you, you know, saber to ozen. And Shmuel says that where do we define residence? That's called makom lina, where you're sleeping. And Rav says makom pita. Pita is the Aramaic formulation of the Hebrew word pas, where you're eating your bread. Now the Gemara opens up this discussion by quoting Rav, and Rav says that our Mishnah, when it says, quote, Hayu ochlim al shulchan aviyem, should not be taken literally. It doesn't mean that the brothers, like let's say you have a hotel and there's a dining room where all the members, you know, all the clients and the guests in the hotel come to the dining room. There's one common dining room. That's not what the Mishnah means, says Rav. When the Mishnah says that Ochlan al Shulchan Aviyam, it means Makable Pras. Makable Pras means that the father signs the check and provides financially for the food. However, every one of the brothers is actually eating in his own house. So the actual physical eating, like the sleeping, is individual. Each ach, each brother, has his own house for both sleeping and eating. What links the brothers together in one common allowance is the allowance of the father to pay for the food. So now, the Gemara goes into the original machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. And that's based on a brisa here at the very bottom of Ayin Beis Amud Beis. Again, we're not going to read it inside. We did so yesterday. I'm just going to summarize it. And the case was somebody who has a Beis Shar, he has an Achsadra, he has a Mirpeset. And the question is, if let's say many people enter into a chatzer, and from the chatzer they enter into a beis shar, etc., etc., they go through your achsadra, through your porch, through your gateway, and the brisa says, eino oser olam, which means that any of these places, whether it's called a Beis Shar or an Achsadra or a Merpeset, even though it could be used as a place for accessibility, but it doesn't have any sort of residential use. It's not a Tashmish. And therefore, Eino Oser Olav. So the fact that his friend, his neighbor, whoever it is, gets access to this Beis Shar, that doesn't effectuate any sort of Iser Tiltal as far as the chaver is concerned. But if, on the other hand, the brisa says, there are other people who are using this chatzer as a beis ha-teven, as a beis ha-bokar, beis ha-eitzim, beis ha-otros, they store wine there, they keep their animals there, that's already a different story. That's called dira, the oser olav. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Eino oser ela makom dira bilvat. Dira means when you use the area. The fact that you store your commodities there or your animals there, that's not called dira. And the Gemara clarifies this with a maisa of Ben Nafcha, if you recall. And based on that whole story, which we're not going to go over right now, but based Nafcha, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he doesn't require a base dira literally, but it means a makom dira. Makom dira means there are two concepts here. It's called a base dira, and we have here Rabbi Yehuda's statement in Oser Ela Makom Dira Bilvad. The Chachamim held that all you need is a base dira, and Rabbi Yehuda says you need a makom dira. So in order for me, as one of your neighbors, to generate an iser for you to carry out into the chatzer and require an eruv, I have to be using your chatzer as a makom dira. So we now have a new concept called a makom dira. And the Gemara now asks, my makom dira. And right here on the top of Daf Ayin Gimel, the Gemara quotes Rav, Rav amar makom pita, Ushmuel amar makom lina. That means that according to Rav, the definition of a makom dira is the place where you eat. According to Shmuel, on the other hand, it's the place where you sleep. And what we're about to learn is a brisa about Tchum Shabbos. And the law is, of course, you're not allowed to walk beyond the Tchum Shabbos more than 2,000 amah. So let's say, for example, a person on Erev Shabbos, Bein HaShemoshes, with the onset of Shabbos, he sets up his Makom Shvisa, this is where he is on Erev Shabbos. So he's allowed, if it's outside the city limits, to carry 2,000 amah. So that means that as far as the city itself is concerned, the city is viewed as one extended 4 amos. And he can go anywhere within the city. Again, when I say carry, that would depend upon an Eruv, but at least he can walk anywhere in the city. Now he walks out of the city, out of the Tchum of the city. Then we're going to allow him on every side beyond the bounds of the city to walk up to, but not beyond 2,000 amah, unless he sets up an Eruv Tchum. Okay. So again, let's just summarize the following principles. From the place that he's Shoves on Bein HaShemoshos, he's allowed to walk up to but not beyond 2,000 amos. As far as the city is concerned, the entire city, in a case where a person finds himself on Shabbos in a city, the entire city is considered like 4 amos, and he's allowed to travel 2,000, he's allowed to walk 2,000 amos beyond the outer boundaries of the city. Nesve. The Gemara now quotes a brisa which lechora at face value seems to contradict Rav Makom Pita. The brisa, in terms of setting up your Tchum Shabbos, says haroim, these are the shepherds, v'hakaitzonim kayotzim, or those are the security people that was specifically given the responsibility of guarding the fields. Let's say what they used to do is they used to harvest, for example, the figs, and then they used to spread the figs out in the fields in order to dry them because they wanted to sell dried figs. And this area was now exposed to the public, so they needed what's called kayotzim. Kayotzim are the shomrim. And then we have Burgenin, if you remember. Those are the people who were in charge of the security around the city. And they used to have these little huts where they used to live. And Shomrei Aperos. And there were those who, when the fruits were ripening on the trees, were in charge of guarding the fruits, make sure nobody would walk away and steal them. Is Bizman Shedakom Lolin Ba'ir, if all of these kind of individuals, the shepherds and the various kinds of security guards, would spend the night in the city, that's called Darkam Lalin Pa'ir, Miloshan Lina. So they were, during the daylight hours, they were out in the fields, but in the evening they would go back to the city. Now, what happened in the city? Although the Brisa uses the word Lina, it's very important that we emphasize, as Rashi points out, that the word Lina means living. It doesn't mean sleeping, it means eating and sleeping. Now, when Shabbos began, and it was still light out, all the people mentioned in the list above were out in the fields. So the Brisa is implying the following question. It answers the question without asking it. Where are these Shomrim Lemineim Kone Shvisa? Which we said, if it's outside the city, that's going to give them a very limited Tchum Shabbos. And the answer is Harein Ka'anshe Ha'ir. In other words, we're going to give them 2,000 Amma beyond the outskirts of the city. The entire city for them is one entity of four Amos. And the reason for this is because Darkon Lolin Ba'ir. So that even though at this particular second in time, with the onset of Shabbos, they find themselves out in the fields, but since they're on their way into the city, they are considered like the Anshei Ha'ir. It's as if they live in the city. However, Bizman Shedarkam Lolin Bisodeh, if let's say, for example, they have these little huts out there in the fields, in the orchards, in the plantations, and that's where they sleep, so that even at night, they are not city dwellers, but they're field dwellers, out in the fields, is then Yeshlam Alpayim L'chol Ruach. In other words, wherever they sleep at night, out in the fields, will give them a radius of 2,000 Am in each direction. But they don't have the status of the Anshei Ha'ir. And let's say they want to walk into the city, well, they can only walk into the city and walk 4 Amos into the city, but not beyond. In any event, you see clearly that according to this Brisa, the dira of a person is called a makom lina. And the question is, what do we mean by lina? If we assume lina means where they sleep, and that's for sure, that's called lina. Lina means where you sleep. Then this brisa becomes a problem for Rav, because Rav says that a makom dira is not where your lan, but rather where your pita is, where you're going to eat. And this brisa seems to put all the emphasis on lina. So if we take the word lina literally, I told you before that if you take Rav's perspective, you might broaden the concept of lina to include achila. But nevertheless, that's only because Rav is talking about a case where he eats in one place and he sleeps in a different place. Here we're talking about a person who, you know, where does he have his permanent residence? And the answer is, he has it in the city in the ratio of this brisa. And that's called Darkam Lolun Ba'ir. If it's Lolun Ba'ir, then it seems like we're talking about Lina, which is exactly what Shmuel said, Makom Lina. And this becomes a problem for Rav. And the Gemara now answers that there are situations in which even Rav agrees that a person's makom dira is his makom lina. Why? Hasam, in the case of Shomrim, these various guards that sleep out in the fields, Anan Sahadi, we can testify, meaning we can assume, the imam tu le rifta hasam tfei nichalahu. Rav says that although they have no access to food, and they have to enter into the city in order to eat, So now we're talking about the sefer of this brisa. Let me just, I'm not sure if I emphasized that point, right? In the sefer, we said, Dakom lolin bisadeh, and they sleep in the fields, and therefore they're not considered bnei ha'ir. They don't have dira in the city. Why? Because they sleep out in the fields. Now, the Gemara assumes that they don't have access to three meals a day out in the fields. That's impossible. You know, you figure, you know, a person eats 21 meals a week, you know, what is he gonna, is he gonna carry a knapsack around with 21 meals in, you know, out in the fields? Again, I remember my first miluim, that was my job. I was packing rations, manot krav, what we call, right? But let's assume we're not talking about the Israeli army right now, so that where are the shops where he eats, you know, the restaurants or the homes, and they're in the city. So in other words, and this is the attack on Rav, and we'll see Rav's answer with the Anan Sadi, these shomrim will sleep out in the fields, but they will eat in the city. And yet the Brisa tells us that because they sleep outside in the fields, therefore they don't have the status of the city slickers, despite the fact that they eat in the city. So we see clearly that when you have a conflict between Makom Lina and Makom Achila, where Shmuel says it depends on Makom Lina, that's the Koveya, Rav says it's a Makom Achila, and yet the Brisa says that these individuals, these Shomrim, are not considered part of the city because they're Lon Besada, they sleep in the fields. Wait a minute. But they eat in the city. So the Gemara answers, Rav says, this is an Anan Sad. What's the Anan Sad? When a person makes a decision where he will eat, and he has all the options in the world, then Rav says that his Makom Dira is determined by where he decides he's going to eat. But if a person doesn't have options, he's forced to have to eat outside of his home, meaning the place he sleeps, then even Rav agrees to Shmuel that a person's Makom Dira is Makom Lina. So the Gemara's language is as follows. Anan Sadi di imam tule rifta hasav. If somebody would only bring them bread and supply them with food out in the fields, certainly, if somebody would bring them the food in the place out in the fields where they sleep, that would be the most comfortable thing in the world. They don't want to schlep all the way into the city. They want to be available 24/7 to fulfill their responsibility as shomrim, because you never know when the, you know, when the thieves are going to come into the field. And that's why they sleep there every night. From their part, it would be a lot easier, more comfortable, and certainly more beneficial for the function of their responsibility if they would be eating out there in the fields. But it's just not happening. So when a person is forced to eat outside of his house, that doesn't set up the Makom Achila, the Makom Pita in Rav's language, as the Makom Dira. He has no choice. He's compelled to eat outside of his house. But if he has two options and they're both equal, then his Makom Dira will be determined by the place he eats. This case of the Roim and the Kayotim and the Burgadin is a case where the reason why they don't eat out in the field is because they have no choice in the matter. If they only had a choice, if they had their druthers, the ideal situation would be that they would eat out in the fields. So when you have a tug of war and there are two equal opportunities, then let's ask this person where he wants to eat. And that the answer to that question will set up his Makom Dira, and that's Rav Shita. But if a person has no choice, he has to eat outside of his dwelling area, then even Rav would agree that the Makom Lina is considered his Makom Dira. Now, you may remember that Rav Yosef had a very difficult time because he suffered in his later years from amnesia and he forgot a lot, large chunks of his Torah. And Abaye, his great disciple, would very often stimulate his memory and remind him of things that he had taught in the past. Amar Rav Yosef lo shmia li lo hashmaitata. This ruling in the name of Rav, that makom pita goreim, I never heard of it. Amar li Abaye at amrit nil. You were the one who taught it to us. And let me remind you, says Abaye to Rav Yosef. Aha amrit nil. And in the context of this Mishnah, the Mishnah that we're studying now in Erevin, You transmitted the halach of Rav of Makom Pita Gorim. How so? Ha'achim shahayu ochlim al shulchan avim v'yashedim bebateyem. So the brothers, each one had his own house, and that's where he slept. And the bayis, the house of their father, had one chatzer, and there were other neighbors that shared that chatzer, that courtyard in front of their father's house. And now when they're setting up an eruv, in order to be matir tiltul from the house into the chatzer, tzrichim eruv l'kol echad v'echad. The father and all the brothers have to each contribute their own individual pas for the eruv, just like all the other dayorim, all the other neighbors who share that one courtyard. We're not going to consider all the brothers as one entity. And the reason for that is because each one sleeps in his own house. V'amrinin loch. And we asked you, meaning the Talmidim, when they were learning this Mishnah, our Mishnah in Erevin, they turned to the Rebbe, to Rav Yosef, and they asked them, Shma mina makom lina gore. Should we derive from this Mishnah that a person's makom dira is the place where he sleeps? Hence, since each one of the brothers sleeps in his own house, they are separate rishuyos, and they each one have to contribute to the Erev Chatzeros, that common Erev that links together all the different rishuyos of that Chatzer. And this now becomes a problem for Rav. The Amrit Lan, and you told us, Allah, in order to answer this Mishnah, in order to defend Rav, we're going to reinterpret this Mishnah. We're not going to talk about a case where they all eat in the same house, which is the literal translation of our Mishnah. So each one of these brothers is eating bebeis avihem, in the father's house, which means that we're taking shulchano in the Mishnah literally, al shulchano mamish. But rather, no, the father's only paying for their mazon. He's shelling out the moz, the papa's dough, as we called it, in order to give us dough. And we're eating it, each one, in his own place. Each one of the brothers eats at his own house. So therefore, the beis aviyam is not called the makom pita. And that's because each one eats in a separate place. So it's not that this Mishnah is predicated on the ruling, on the principle of makom lina gorem. Leolam, I would tell you makom pita gorem, but each one is eating in his own house. And this is the way we can reconcile our Mishnah with Rav, by quoting Rav Zukimta, that we're not talking about a case where they all eat in their father's house, because if that be the case, they all have the same makom dira, and one Erev would suffice for all of them, but rather we're talking about a case where the father just shells out the money, and therefore the Beis Aviyam is not the Makom Pita. And therefore they each have their own separate place where they sleep and eat, and therefore in the case where the Erev is being placed in the house of one of the various other neighbors, each one of the brothers has to contribute individually to the Eruv. And that's how we can reconcile our Mishnah with Rav. But in any event, Abai succeeded in reminding Rav Yosef that he was very much aware of the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel about Makom Lina versus Makom Pita. Now, according to Rav, as we discussed, our Mishnah is talking about brothers that receive a stipend from their father, but they don't actually eat on their father's table. And now we have this concept of makable pras, those who are supported by someone. And the Gemara now sees this as a jumping board, if I can use that phrase in Hebrew, we call it keresh kvitza, to discuss other scenarios in halacha where we can discuss makabli pras, those who are supported by others. Tanur Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa, mishi yesh lo chamesh nashim, he has five wives, and they all live in the same chatzer. Each one of his wives has her own living quarters, but they share one chatzer. And ha'imekablos pras mibaleh, and they are supported by their husband. Now we have another scenario, which is being compared to the first, and that is v'chamisha avadim, you have five servants that live in the same chatzer. They all have, each one has his own living quarters, but mekablem pras mirabeh. However, the Adon, the master, is signing the checks and he's paying for the food. And now the Braisa is going to record a machlokes tanoim between two different Rabbi Yehudas, and they're going to argue about whether or not these, meaning the five women, or in the case of the five avadim, are allowed to be metaltel from their houses into the chotzer without an eruv, or from the chotzer into the houses. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseir matir ben Noshim v'yoser ba'avadim. According to the first dayah here in this braisa, that's Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseir, the women do not generate an iser tiltel on the Baal, nor one onto the other, nor from the Baal onto the Noshim, and therefore there's no need for an Eruv that is represented by five different women, who each of which individually have to participate in the Eruv. But v'yoser ba'avadim, but in the case of the Avadim, we need an Eruv in which not only does the Adon, who has a house that borders on this chotzer, but even every single one of the avadim, all have to participate together in this eruv. And apparently this distinction between noshim and avadim is because of the principle called ishto kigufo, and that generates what's called noshim nimshachos achar baila, that she is, so to speak, dragged, she's an extension of her husband, as long as her husband, of course, is supporting her. But we don't have a din of Eved Kigufo Shel Adono, and therefore the Eved is not Nimshach Achar HaAdon, he's not in any way an extension of his master. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseir insists that in the case of Avadim, each Eved has to individually participate in the Eruv. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava Matir Vavadim V'Oser Benosh. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseir comes to the exact opposite conclusion. He's going to be mekil, and leniently he's going to allow, in the case of Avadim, one Eruv for all of them, and the Avadim do not have to participate in the Eruv. But in the case of Noshim, then we're going to have an Eruv from each one of the Noshim individually. Now it's very interesting that the Bala Ma'or, Rabbeinu Zrachya Levi, who was a Spanish giant at the time, the Rishonim, he paskins like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, and it would seem that we're not going to apply a principle called halacha be'erevin kedivrei ha-mekil. What do I mean? With regard to Noshim, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra was mekil, and he said you don't need an erev from each one of these ladies. And yet the Baal Amar is going to paskin not like Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, but rather like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, which is Oser ben Noshim. Now, what's fascinating is the Rambam paskins Likula like both of these opinions. In other words, the Rambam is going to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra with regard to Noshim. He's going to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava with regard to Avadim. And he's going to apply the principle of Halacha Kedivrei HaMekil to both issues of Noshim and Avadim. And at first glance, the Rambam seems to have the upper hand here against the Baal Amar. The Baal Amar wants to paskin like one of these two shitos. He chooses, for whatever reason, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. But then, he's paskining lechumra in the case of Noshim. The Rambam says, now I'm going to paskin lekula in both these cases of Avadim and Noshim. However, Abos, I have to tell you, this Rambam is tough as nails. I'll tell you why. Halacha kedivrei ha-mekil be erevin, which means that an erevin, we always pass on like that opinion that is lenient, that only applies if there's no stira. In other words, you have two different machlokas in, and you want to be mekil in one, and you want to be mekil in the other, that's fine. And even if it would be the same, you know, the same names, or the flip names, you know, which tanoim are arguing, so you want to choose one Tana, and you want to choose his Bar Plukta, and paskin like both. That's not a stira, because each issue is independent. But here, we don't have a way of understanding the Rambam, because the Rambam is involved in a stira. In other words, what is the basis for a kula? In the case of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, the basis for a kula is the fact that there's a principle called Ishto Kegufa. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says, no, there's no kula of Ishto Kegufa, and therefore Oser Benoshim. In the case of Avadim, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra is Machmir Lechumra, and he holds that each Eved who doesn't have the, you know, the elevated status of Kegufa is a separate Rishon, separate entity. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, on the other hand, he's talking about, well, to what extent are you dependent upon the Adon to support yourself, and therefore he's mekil in the case of Avadim, who are totally dependent upon the Adon. And in the case of Noshim, he's not operating with Ishto Kegufo, and the women really have, each one of them, their own financial base. And even if the husband is supporting them, but they are to some extent independent, and therefore Oser Benoshim. And yet the Rambam somehow grabs, you know, he grabs both Shitos Lekula, and he's going to accept, as we said before, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra Lekula in the case of Noshim, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava Lekula in the case of Avadim. That's a stira, that's a contradiction in Eube. You can't take two deos that are mutually exclusive and paskin like both of them. So I want to read to you the following. And this is based on the commentaries of the Rambam. Ein bo zeh stira. Why? Tofsim es svaras ha-mekil, she'eved nimshach achar adono, usvaras ha-mekil be'isha mishum she'ishto gegufa. V'ein osrim zeh zeh. Again, keep in mind, again, this is just a footnote on the side, that we're talking about a case where the Erev is being placed in the husband or the father's Rishus. Why is there no contradiction in the Rambam's Psak? The Rambam says that there are two different methods by which we can integrate all these people into one Rishus. In the case of an Eved, we have a halacha called Eved Nimshach Achar Adono. He is totally committed to serve his master. And it's gufo kanilo, like it's as if he, on a monetary basis, he is the he's the property, he's owned by his adon. In Hilchas Erevin, that becomes a primary factor, a variable, which is called Eved Nimshach Achar Adono. In the case of an Isha, we don't have that svara of Isha Nimshach Achar Baila. And therefore, we understand very well that Reuven ben Bisera ben Bava, is going to be machmir in the case of Nashim. But here the Rambam says there's a whole new svara and a new method by which we can integrate the various ladies with their common husband, and that is through the halacha of Ishto Kegufo. So again, Ishto Kegufo is one method by which we can integrate them all into one entity. And we have another halacha called Eved Nimshach Achar Rabo, or Achar Adono, and that itself is going to integrate the Avodim together with their master as one Rishus. And therefore the Rambam is free to accept both of these methods, each one that's presented by a different Tana, because Halacha Kedivrei HaMeikel B'Eruv. So Halacha Kedivrei HaMeikel B'Eruv means we're going to accept this Kula, and we're going to accept that Kula. And we're going to basically say that there are two different methods. Each one is valid unto itself. Each one is represented by the opinion of one Tana as opposed to the other Tana. And you can make them all into one Rishus either through the normal channels of Nimshach, which apply only to Eved, or through the special unique channel of Ishto Kegufo in the case of Nosh. And all this is unknown to the Baal Amor, because as we said before, the Baal Amor sees this as an either-or situation, and therefore he chooses to paskin that Eved Nimshach Achar Adono, but that doesn't apply to an Isha. She doesn't have that same regulation or that same principle. Amar Rav, my time under Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Why is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava lenient in the case of Avodim? Is there some source in the Tanakh from which we could derive this principle of Eved Nimshach Achar Adono? Tichsiv, it says in Sefer Daniel. Now, keep in mind that initially it's hard to believe, but Nebuchadnezzar raised the status of Daniel above all the other officers in his court. It's only later on when they spoke Lashon Hara against Daniel, and then Nebuchadnezzar wanted to get rid of Daniel. But initially, Daniel was the head honcho. We've seen this often. I don't know if you know about the history of the Abarbanel, for example, in Spain 500 years ago. Very often, the government will attach a tremendous high status to one of the great outstanding Jews in the Jewish community. And what does the Pasuk in Daniel say about Daniel? Keep in mind that Daniel, Sefer Daniel, is written in Aramaic. It's one of the most difficult, challenging books in Tanakh. And the Pasuk says, V'Daniel Bisra Malka. He was located in the Bisra of the Melech. Bisra is the Shar. In other words, he was allowed into the entranceway, Pnima, into the Beis HaMelech. And that's where he would sit, in the Shar HaMelech. And that's considered a Maila Gedola. That's usually where the judges would sit, and the various high offices. Now, the Torah, the Tanakh, is not describing Daniel at one particular moment on the clock and saying that he was Yoshev Bishar HaMelech, but rather his status. He is described in the present tense, no matter where he is at this moment, as a Shar Beis HaMelech. Wherever he was, the Torah gives him that chashivus as if he's Yoshev B'Shar HaMelech. I give you an example, but don't even begin to equate them. The Halacha sees a Kohen Gadol as if he's 24-7 in the Beis HaMikdash. Even if the Kohen Gadol steps out of the Beis HaMikdash, he's considered al pi halacha as if he's in the Beis HaMikdash. So Daniel is considered by this description of Tanakh as Bisra Malka. He's Yoshev B'Shar HaMelech constantly, 24-7, even though physically he's not there. And why is that? Because he has a relationship to the king, which is a very unique relationship. He's a high-powered, high-status officer in the king's court. He has a total commitment and dedication to serve the king, and the king will support him. All of the expenditures are signed by the king's treasury. And it's considered as if he's always next to the king. According to Rav, this is the basis for Rav Yehuda ben Bava. The source Rav Yehuda ben Bava, that if the Eved is dedicated to the service of his master and he is supported by his master, he's considered like, if I could use the word tofel, he's like secondary, he's batel to his Adon, and therefore he's always considered as if he lives in the reshus of his Adon. And that's a unique definition of the relationship between an Eved and the Adon. Of course, you could always ask, maybe Daniel is the exception to the rule rather than the rule. But I would say that this is what we call an asmachta. It's somebody is mishares someone else. He's in his service, right? Shimon is in the service of Reuven, and Reuven is therefore supporting Shimon. It becomes dar bershu. So it's as if he's living in the reshus of his master. Now, the Gemara now goes on to analyze various other scenarios. For example, Ben Eitzel Aviv. Let's say you have a son, and he lives in the court, so to speak, in the chatzar of his father. And even though he has his own quarters of living, but nevertheless he's supported by his father, Kidam Moran. As we saw in the Mishnah, that in the case that the Erev is placed in the possession of his father, of the father, or if there are no other Dayorim, then there's no need to collect an Erev from the brothers, because, as we said before, they're Nimshach Achar Avih. Just like we saw that the Eved is Nimshach Basar HaAdon, so too an Av is Nimshach, a Ben is Nimshach Achar Av. Isha Eitzel Baila, the Eved Eitzel Rabo, is Bepluta de Rav Yehuda ben Beseir Rav Yehuda ben Bava. That's the machlokas that we had before. What's the status of an Isha who's being supported by her husband, and she has her own chatzah, she lives in her own house, or what's the status of an Eved who lives in his own living quarters, but he's supported by the Adon? But where is the suffix? All that was poshut. So again, there's no machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda as far as Ben Eitzel Aviv. Ben Eitzel Aviv is certainly Nimshach Achar Aviv. Machlokas can be Isha and Eved. Oh, here's the suffix. This I don't know. Talmid Eitzel Rabo Mai. What happens if you have the following setup? It fascinates me that this reality existed as way back, even at the time of the Talmud. It sounds like it's so contemporary. We have one individual, and we'll call him the Rav. Again, I don't know if he's a fundraiser, but somehow he has funds, he has access to funds, and he's like the Rosh Kolel, and he supports his Talmidim, or at least one Talmud, and that Talmud is totally dependent upon his Rav for financial increments. My. Do we say that there's halacha of Talmud Nimshach Eit Achrei Rabo? Or do we say no? The Talmud is on his own. He's a separate, independent Rishus, even though, despite the fact that he's being supported by his Rav. So again, if he's Nimshach Achrei Rabo, then we don't need an Erev between the Rebbe and the Talmud. And not only that, if there's a need for an Erev with other members of the court, of the common courtyard, then we don't need a contribution from the Talmud. What should we say? No. The Talmud, is not Nimshach Achrei Rabo, and therefore, number one, if there's a common courtyard used by both the Rebbe and the Talmud, the Rebbe and the Talmud, aser one on the other, and therefore they need an Eruv. And how much more so if there are other neighbors who border and utilize the same chatzer, and we have to set up an Eruv, we're going to have to get the contribution of the pas from the Talmud and not just rely on the Rav. Toshma, the Rav Bei Rabbi Chiya Amar, Ein Anu Tzrichim Li Arev. Rabbi Chiya was the Rosh Hashiva, and Rav was in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Chiya. He shared the same chatzer as Rabbi Chiya. And not only that, Rabbi Chiya supported Rav. Omar, Ein Anu Tzrichim Li Arev Sharei Anu Somchun Al Shulchan Shel Rabbi Chiya. We are dependent upon the finances of Rabbi Chiya supporting us, and therefore we don't have to be part of the Eruv. The Rabbi Chiya Bei Rav. Rabbi Chiya, now we're going back in history one generation earlier, he was in the courtyard, so to speak, of Rabbi. Omar, he also declared, Ein Anu Tzrichim Li Arev Sharei Anu Somchim Al Shulchan Shel Rav. Rav was the Rosh Hashiva. I'm sorry, not Rav, Rebbe, I meant to say Rabbi Yudha Nasi was the Rosh Hashiva, and we, Rabbi Chiya and his colleagues, were being supported by the Rosh Hashiva, by Rebbe, and we don't generate any Iser one on the other. We don't need to be part of the Eruv. Now, just to end the shiur, I want to mention to you that in terms of the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, which we spent almost an entire shiur on, as to whether Makom Pita is Kovea one's Dira or Makom Lina, the Rush himself paskins like Rav, and Makom Pita is going to determine your Dira, your Makom Dira. And he also paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, that only a Makom Dira will generate an Isur, and an Isur that requires a separate Eruv is, the Rosh paskins like Rav, is determined by the place that you eat. Again, we have to reiterate that that's only when you have a choice and you decide to opt to eat in one place and sleep in another place. So let's make a note of where we got up to here. We're on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're up to Boy Minei Abaye Miraba, and that Amir Tzashem is where we'll pick it up. We'll pick it up tomorrow. So let me take this opportunity of wishing everyone a great day.